Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema. Season 2.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Yeah, I recommended Whiplash to my parents, and the voice note I got the next morning was hilarious. I thought I'd share it with you.
Good morning, Hal. What the fuck was wrong with that fuck pig in Whiplash? My God, I wanted to annihilate him, that poor bloody kid.
On today's episode, we will be talking about The Burial. This is a 2023 film directed by Maggie Betts and stars Jamie Foxx, Tommy Lee Jones and Journey Smollett. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. Inspired by true events, a lawyer helps a funeral home owner save his family business from a corporate behemoth, exposing a complex web of race, power and injustice. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Life ain't free and death ain't cheap. No. You pay when you wake and you pay when you sleep.
Well now, the giant killer versus corporate greed. One gives you what you want, the other what you need. A case about contracts, not about race. The narrative here is colour of face. One cocky fox, a tired old Jones. David versus Goliath, funeral homes. Feels good to give what he's owed. Reap the rewards of what he's sold.
Life ain't free and death ain't cheap. You pay when you wake and you pay when you sleep.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Jerry O'Keefe was a Marine pilot in World War II. He shot down 5 Japanese planes in one day on April 22, 1945, becoming an ace in one day. He shot down 2 more on April 28, 1945. He was later awarded the Navy Cross and the Distinguished Flying Cross.
Wow.
Pretty impressive.
Pretty amazing, yeah. Could find a nice little cafe and have a wicked chat with that dude. I wonder what he flew. The Corsair? Wildcat?
I mean, you're saying words that I don't understand.
P-38 Lightning, P-51 Mustang.
Yep.
P-47 Thunderbolt.
Keep going. I'd love to hear it.
That's all I got.
Yeah. But that, what a day at work. What a day in the office.
What a day, mate.
I just find it mad that on a film that focuses on his funeral business in his later life, there's potentially another film in there with his exploits in World War II. Mm. To be that highly celebrated for your exploits, like becoming an ace in one day, that just sounds amazing. What a thing to have on your fucking CV.
I think it's because there were pilots that had shot down 100. So he's not like the greatest. You wouldn't make a film about him. There were fighter pilots out there that easily took down 30 or 40 Messerschmitts.
So in relative terms, he wasn't that good.
Well, no, it's still, that's a huge contribution. Yeah. To have 7 confirmed kills and you haven't been shot down, you're plus 7 against the enemy, aren't you? That's amazing. That's a false multiplier. You have contributed to the war 7 times. You've taken 7 enemies out of the sky. You've probably saved 400 or 500 lives.
Yeah, because to me, shooting down 5 enemy planes in one day is a fucking shift, right?
Yeah.
That takes a lot of skill and perseverance and all these good things. Just find it, in a film that's so full of like facts and insights into his life, that is one fact that I feel should have been shared within the film, because in the context of the film, they're trying to paint his character to be this really strong, this really important man. There's your thing right there. Mm. Look what he did. Look at the risk he took for his country. Look how successful a soldier he was. Like, he's a hardworking man. Like, he's done all these amazing things. Yeah, just interesting fact.
So he might have been carrier-based fighter. Imagine that, middle of the Pacific, take off from a carrier. Yeah. That's a very different type of war.
How mad is that, that he's had that career where he deals in death and then becomes a funeral director?
It's a bit morbid.
It is a bit, isn't it?
It's a bit morbid. I don't know if I could marry him.
No.
What would you talk about?
Well, yeah.
And he was prolific at shagging. So imagine you've killed 7 fighters, then you open a burial home, and then you have 13 kids and 43 grandkids and 62 great-grandchildren. It's like, dude, you're procreating and killing and burying them.
Man likes a fight, likes a funeral, and likes a fuck. Second fact, Tommy Lee Jones replaced his fugitive co-star, Harrison Ford.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd prefer Harrison Ford in a role like this. I don't think it's the biggest, meatiest role of either of their careers.
I think Ford dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
In my opinion, yeah. There was nothing special to Tommy Lee Jones's character.
Who would you rate as the better actor? Ford or Lee Jones?
Well, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, I think so.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm not, but as charisma goes, probably Ford. Ford's an action star. He's an action hero.
Ford's a movie superstar. Lee Jones is an actor, a character actor, I'd say.
Yeah, and a character actor that can be a lead. So he has got, I've always highly rated him. I agreed with this once. Someone said the greatest American actor is Tommy Lee Jones and the greatest actor is Daniel Day-Lewis.
I like that.
I think it. I mean, if you look at what Tommy Lee Jones has done, he's substantial in my opinion.
Yeah.
Very unique.
Alexander Payne was originally going to direct the movie. I included this fact because I know he is one of, if not your favourite director.
Yeah, of recent memory, he's my favourite.
And through the small snippets of conversation we've had about this film, we always try to limit that before we go to record an episode. I've got a sense that you aren't necessarily this film's biggest fan. I think it's safe to say that. Would you have liked to see this film, this story, handled by someone like Alexander Payne, who's known for doing more sort of realistic films that are deep-rooted in real
human
emotions?
Experience.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah, he takes something that all of us can experience and puts it on a screen, and it's relatable. I don't know, it would have been determined by the script.
Mm.
The script, well, it's not believable. So in my mind, the script is exaggerated and they've taken huge artistic license. If this is a true story, I'd like to know what parts, apart from it being just a court case that's settled and lots of money was won. I don't think this is an Alexander Payne film.
So you don't?
I know a lot of people diss him for Downsizing,
I think.
So I've not seen Downsizing, but every director's allowed a bad day.
Of course.
So I remember when declaring that Alexander Payne, because I didn't. It's too easy to say Scorsese, Tarantino. I wanted to think now who's my favorite director now, and for three would have been Nebraska, The Descendants, and Sideways. I enjoy all three exceptionally, and I get emotional watching them. I find them to be definitely my flavor of crisp.
Yeah,
but obviously I adore Paul Thomas Anderson, all of that stuff, but. Yeah, he had one duff, but guess what? Spielberg has duff films.
Yeah.
Tarantino has duff films. I still think to this day Tarantino should never have put himself in his films, but I adore his films.
Yeah.
And I think if he could go back, he would change that as well. I think he'd get rid of it. I don't think Alexander Payne should have done it. I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd have to probably go and change my bio.
Yeah.
Peter Weir.
I think... He's certainly a more established director than the actual director of this film, Maggie Betts, who's only done a couple of films, feature-length films. She's done a few other short films, and I think she's done some television as well. But
shows,
yeah. I think that I don't think even someone as established as Payne, if Maggie Betts is working on off of a script, I don't think any director could really sort of. Make it sparkle, if that makes sense, because from what I've taken away from this film, it's a very generic courtroom film that has glimpses, has moments of entertainment, but it's mostly quite bland. It feels like a lot of the narrative's crowbarred in there. And yeah, unless you've got a director on board that rewrote the script, rewrote the dialogue, I think it's certainly not as good as IMDb makes it out to be, in my personal opinion.
I agree. If I was a fish... and I was in the pond and you were looking at me.
Yeah.
All you're seeing me do is look at a hook, land in the water and then reel away. And I'm just looking at it like that. And it never once got a hook in me.
Yeah, you didn't want to bite that bait.
Not once.
Not interested, no.
Even the calls. I went behind the calls.
No.
I wasn't in... this isn't a just battle. This isn't getting someone off of a murder charge that they didn't commit. This is two white guys who are really wealthy, one considerably more wealthy than the other, fighting it out in a courtroom over a fucking contract when they sat on a yacht having lobster and prawns.
And let's not forget the whole reason they're there. They're profiting off of death.
Yeah.
Which is the most morbid meal imaginable.
Yeah. And it's only because of laws and regulations that I can't just put my mum in a wicker box.
Well, she's still alive.
Set that dog on fire. No, because she said, if I could do it, how I would let you just set fire to the coffin in the garden. Everyone wins. It's not expensive. We can say a little prayer. Don't have to go to a church. Don't have to see other family members. That's great.
Well,
we're not allowed to.
Your nostrils wouldn't win.
What do you mean, my nostrils?
Well, the smell of burning mum flesh.
Oh, they do it all the time on the Ganges. You get used to it. Just be like, smells like spring. But it'd be like, smells like mum.
Okay. On that note, what did you like about the burial?
Great cast. You got one of the greatest old guard American actors of all time being chummy with one of the more modern greatest American actors of all time. And I think it's always nice to see the big heavyweights do a movie together. And it is a like because, you know, I thought, well, I think the world of Jamie Foxx, you know, Collateral Ray, I think the world of Tommy Lee Jones, JFK, yeah. Even Under Siege, my dear God, I can't say that because it's got old Seagal in it, Stephen Seagal, but I love JFK. What's the one you mentioned earlier? Fugitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
I didn't kill my family. I don't care. I love Tommy Lee Jones. And I thought, do you know what? This is going to be good. Honestly believed it. But I was barely 15, 20 minutes in. I thought this is sort of like when De Niro and Pacino do collaborative work now. It's a very righteous kill. You know, when you think these are the best actors in the world and then they get together for a movie and you think, oh, wicked. And then it's just not. And you're like, oh.
Yes, that sense of letdown.
It cheapens them. For me, watching someone who I've always admired, like Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, it doesn't matter so much for Jamie Foxx because the guy, he's ridiculous. He's a titan of all things. Music, acting, business, altruism. Guy's a dog. But Tommy Lee Jones, his legacy is acting.
Yeah.
And I was like, this role was nothing. It was so nothing. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe you. And I feel sorry for the original guy. I suppose the true person it's based on, O'Keefe. Oh, fuck, you asked me a like and I've gone into a dislike by accident. See, that's what this film is.
Yeah.
It is hard to stay the course with likes on this. So I'll stick with great cast when you're looking at how the powerhouse names.
It's exactly that. When you look at who's headlining the project, you see those two names. And Tommy Lee Jones and Jamie Foxx, I don't know about you, but they're two actors that as soon as I see their name, I think charisma, I think charm, I think personality. Whether they're playing a good guy, a villain, someone who's detestable, someone who's lovable, they're always a commanding presence on screen.
Yep.
So like you, when I see the picture on Amazon Prime of them standing back to back and I see it's a courtroom drama, I love both the actors, I love me some courtroom drama. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'm in for a good time. 7.6, 7.3, something like that on IMDb. I was like, wow, a newly released film for us to dig our teeth into. I was really excited. But like you, again, it's hard to not go into a dislike when you're sort of let down. Mm. You look at and your expectations heighten because it looks like it should be so promising. And then the end result, when it doesn't match those expectations, at least you can't help but feel a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, this is not a high standard of filmmaking.
I tend to agree.
Yeah, it's just not.
Yeah.
Another like, my favourite characters in it were Alan Ruck and Mamadou Afi's characters.
Mm.
So these were the supporting cast essentially, but I liked their stories more than the actual film and the whole thing they're trying to get you behind in the film is just like, I don't care. Like, I wasn't inspired by it. But what I did like was Alan Ruck.
Michael Red.
That's it, Michael Red. He's like, comes from a line of KKK.
Yeah.
His great granddad was a KKK member. And he even admits, like a stone cold dude to Jamie Foxx, that he is a bit prejudiced. He's trying to work on it. I thought that honesty was like amazing.
Yeah, it takes balls.
Yeah, I thought as the story was going on, I still weren't very invested. And when he said that, I thought, I like his struggle, actually. I like the fact that he's not used to working with black people and he struggles with it because his granddad was a racist. But slowly throughout the film, you see him sort of, he's still a professional.
Yeah.
Still a lawyer. He tries not to be too... He just tries not to let the racist come out of him. But by the end, you're assuming they sort of imply that this experience with Garrett, who's Jamie Foxx's character, has enlightened him. The other one is Mamadou Afi. He's the young lawyer that first works with Tommy Lee Jones when they first decide to go and broker this contract.
Yes.
And I found him more interesting than the whole crew that Jamie Foxx brought along.
Yeah.
It's too much going on.
Yeah.
5-6 guys trying to mix their lawyer and their culture ideals all between each other. It was just messy.
It was heavily handled, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I feel like, Mamadou Afi's character, he's the one that broke the case open anyway.
Yeah.
So Tommy Lee Jones would have just stuck with the young intern lawyer.
Yeah.
He would have done it all anyway, wouldn't have needed to hire Jamie Foxx and stuff. So I prefer the two of the supporting actors over the two lead actors.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because that's one of the things I've got noted down here is Mamadou Afi. In a film with two Academy Award winners, I actually think his performance as this young hotshot lawyer, Hal Dawkins, was the best of the bunch.
Mm.
And like we touched on your first, like that's mad when you look at the head billing. And as good as I thought Fox was, I personally thought he was good in that charismatic role that's sort of made for him. I think Mr. Athey showed great emotional range. And he was, like Hugh, he's the only one that I was really drawn to as a character. And that's mad to think when he doesn't have an awful lot to do. His character is important with the film, but in terms of dialogue and lines, he's kind of really just a bridge between a larger-than-life lawyer and a humble old man funeral homeowner. He's like that bridge between the two. He's like, he connects those two worlds sort of thing.
Yeah.
But for me, to have such a young actor to be the standout performer in that trio, I think he deserves huge praise for that. Mm. And I know we're on our likes, but for me, that is a problem if you've got two superstar actors being outperformed by a young starlet. Something's wrong in the filmmaking process there.
Definitely.
Because, as I mean, we could be sitting here going, you know, Jamie Foxx and Tommy Lee Jones are incredible as we expected, but a special nod goes to Athey for being such a good young performer. But it's the opposite. We're like, well, he's actually better than these two titans.
He was the only one that gave an almost believable performance as a lawyer. Like, there was no legal nomenclature in this film whatsoever. If that's what it takes to be a lawyer, anyone can do it. It is just a show.
Well,
it's just, how can I hype up a jury? It should never be like that.
It was,
and I don't believe it is like that.
It was more performative, wasn't it, than like working the case, finding the facts. Mm. Like, it was all about like appealing to the jurors, which is obviously a fact within in a courtroom, but the way that they were doing it was like a performance. And I tend to agree from both sides, both lawyers. I was just a bit like, I mean, I've done jury duty and there was certainly none of that performance aspects when I was at jury duty. It was very to the facts.
Yeah.
It was very, well, we suggest that you did it for this, or, well, it looks based on evidence that you did this. Can you deny or can you confirm?
Mm.
It's very factual. I wasn't sitting going, oh, you know, it'd be really good here if I had a big box of popcorn because this guy's on fire. He's fucking hilarious. I was really, this is great. I couldn't wait to get out.
Yeah, it's like theatrical, which I didn't really take to.
Yeah,
I love it. I keep bursting into dislikes, man.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
you gonna do?
We've said it before in this podcast. When you love a film, or when a film takes you by surprise in a good, positive way, it's easy just to stay focused on the likes. But when a film like this one, I think it's clear to see already that it's not necessarily one of the best we've seen in recent times.
Well, because it's all been done before. There's been better films about racism. There's been better films set in a courtroom.
Mm.
So unless you're going to match it or go higher, you're a nothing film.
Exactly that.
For me, you are nothing.
It's just a drop in the ocean, right?
A drop.
Yeah. Have you got any more likes for me?
Oh, yeah, it's a like, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
Hold on. Oh, God. I'm sorry, I'm reading one of my likes and it looks like a dislike. No.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll go on to my likes then. And for me, it's just a good old-fashioned courtroom drama.
No.
The Burial is a standard David versus Goliath tale. But when the setting is in a courtroom, I am instantly intrigued. It's been a while since I watched a new courtroom-centred story, and I enjoyed diving into a classic lawyer-off. Now, it's worth me saying, this one doesn't offer anything massively new to the genre, like you said. But I did like that the second half was much stronger than the first. And as cinema goes on in this modern time, I think that's a rare thing in films nowadays. So whenever a movie phoenixes, I feel obliged to mention it. Now, in terms of the film as a whole, it's definitely sort of second division in courtroom films. But when the setting is in a courtroom, I'm interested. I like to see that battle. I like to see two lawyers thrash it out. So from the offset, I was interested. My interest did peak once that it sort of stayed within the confines of a courtroom, but it didn't do anything memorable or enjoyable enough for me to like laud it or applaud it or recommend it to others, really.
I just don't believe for 1 second it was as circusy as they portrayed in real life.
No.
I just refuse to believe it was that circusy.
I think when it's plastered everywhere that it's based on a true story, I think if this was just a completely fabricated courtroom drama about an imaginary Goliath versus an imaginary David, I think it'd be easier to sort of to take it that it's this big performative spectacle. But the fact that it's based on true events, it's hard to sort of look past that.
Mm.
And my last like I got about it, you touched on it, is the man himself, Jamie Foxx. He's a commanding presence on screen and he always performs with commitment and passion. Now, I think the character of Willie Gray really played to his strengths. And in a film that was mainly drab and dull, I think him playing a larger-than-life charismatic character, he was entertaining. I mean, he's made for these sort of films, isn't he? Confident, cocksure guy.
I think it's the worst I've ever seen of him.
Okay.
And it's the worst. I think that's to do with the character, though, in the script. It's just he didn't have a natural evolution in the film.
Yeah.
He's just this really excitable guy who never once showed his talent. Anyone can say, Tommy Lee Jones, this guy said no to the KKK. That is about the essence. That is essentially what he did in this court case. If you believe the film, he literally said, Tommy Lee Jones said no to the KKK. Look at the rest of the film.
Yeah.
That's all he did. He did nothing else as a lawyer. Like, there's no... I like Better Call Saul for a courtroom.
Yeah.
I find that much better. He cites laws. They cross-reference. They cross... What's it called? Cross-interview.
Examination.
Cross-examination and stuff. It was really weird.
Mm.
It was a strange experience. And I was surprised he said yes after reading that script.
So there wasn't anything about his performance that you enjoyed? The quirky one-liners, nothing?
No, because... And don't take this the wrong way. Because he was a religious man.
Yeah. Well, we know from you that that's...
It's not that. But for me, all cards are off the table when someone's religious and they're the lead in the film. It's like, well, they've got their faith, so they're happy, like, all the time. You know, he was happy throughout this whole film. Hey, a couple of times he's just upset. He's like, oh, you know, we all love God. You never bring God into a courtroom, even though they say swear on the Bible. It's church and state should be separate, and I consider law state. Don't bring God into a courtroom.
Well, you're then questioning faith, not facts. Mm. And I think in a court of law, it should be that. It's not, oh, if you say you don't believe in God, then we're going to struggle to believe what you have to say. Mm. It should always be based on the cold, hard facts.
I think I just don't like his character. It's nothing to do with him as an actor. I know he's an exceptional actor. I don't like his character. Like, they aspire to be Johnny Cochran in this. And Johnny Cochran was not this really amazing moral lawyer. He defended Michael Jackson, a 9 out of 10 nonce. He defended Tupac Shakur, a gangbanger.
A 9 out of 10 nonce.
9 out of 10, because he never got convicted, so you get the ultra fans who refuse to believe he did it, but there's no smoke without fire.
Yeah.
All them kids coming forward, and, you know, none of them got a payoff in the... He paid off lots of kids at the start.
I mean, let's be honest, his house was called fucking Neverland, so let's...
No, but you don't even have to... For you to say, no, he didn't do it because he never got convicted, then what, you're behind Jimmy Savile? You support Jimmy Savile?
Yeah.
And he weren't convicted either, motherfucker. Yeah, he was buried state funeral bait, pretty much.
Yeah.
So with the Michael Jackson people, them always saying, oh, no, he was never convicted, then people just want money. Well, guess what? Loads of them came forward after he died when they won't get no money. Yes, there is an estate, Michael Jackson estate. You might get some money. You won't, though, because they're not suing for the money. And so if some are, you're denying them, you know, you're denying people their right to be a victim after being sexually abused as kids. He was a nonce. I'm allowed to believe that. Whether people don't want to believe it. But again, back to Johnny Cochran, they're aspiring to be him in the film. The guy defended OJ. He definitely murdered his girlfriend.
Yeah.
The blood, the fabrics, everything. It was even in this film, the defense lawyer says he definitely murdered her.
Yeah.
But she says, but I'd still defend him or something. So Tupac Shakur, Michael Jackson, why would you aspire to defend all these immoral sort of celebrities?
I think it's and I think that's a question we should be asking about them as characters, as individuals aspiring to be that sort of person. I think what they're aiming for is to have that high profile of sort of client.
But that's not class, but for money. That's tacky.
Yes, it is. It's exactly that. It's not like I'm fighting for what I believe. I believe this person is guilty or innocent. I'm going to defend him or I'm going to fight to get the other party prosecuted. It's not about that. This is going to get me a level of celebrity status that I can live on that can make me loads of money, which you're right, is not an attractive aspect.
Yeah, so I don't like his character.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Because I find if you aspire to just be a celebrity lawyer who defends pigs, like that Johnny Cochran defended a guy called Jim Brown, who had been done on 8-9 charges over 2-3 years of beating women up to the point of almost death.
Yeah.
And he kept defending him.
That's a problem.
That's immoral.
Yeah.
So no, I do not like.
So is that one of your dislikes, him as a character?
No, man.
Okay, well, do you want to go on to your actual dislikes? That was an off-the-cuffy, was it?
Yeah. It's when they're bad, they're bad. Okay, so this, I've already mentioned it, but I was not behind the calls.
Yeah.
I saw two wealthy businessmen, one astronomically wealthier than the other, but still eight funeral homes and an insurance company in one state must fetch a pretty penny. You know, 13 kids, 40 grandkids and 25 great grandkids. Don't start moaning about money after you've banged out 13 kids again, i.e. religion, Catholic, no condom. You know, you're gonna struggle.
Yeah.
But still, eight bloody funeral homes and insurance company. Tommy Lee Jones is better than this. He's better than that role. It's not a story worth telling unless you worship money over matter.
Okay.
I wrote that little bit down.
I like that little bit.
Second dislike. I'm just gonna not even let you answer that one.
Well, go for it, mate.
Bigger and better films have conveyed the black struggle for half the price. So I am very lucky to have grown up with Edward Zwick's Glory, Spielberg's Amistad, Alan Parker's Mississippi Burning, because they sobered me to the atrocities that were beset upon the black race. But in The Burial, it's a bookmark for today's generation to measure racism, and so by default it is rushed and didn't land.
I just allowed a pause there for us to think about what you said.
And you get my point?
I'm
35 years old. I have seen incredible films about what happened to black people in the US, specifically in the US, let's say. Let's keep the conversation there.
Yeah.
You know, films where tears came to my eyes and I thought how horrifically they struggled.
Yeah.
And then I see a film like this, you know, 25, 30 years later, and I'm like, God, they're getting worse. The films are getting worse.
I've got something similar based on what you said there as one of my dislikes. Mm. So maybe we can tie them in together.
Let's try this.
And like tie it up nicely in a bow.
Let's try
so it. One of the things I didn't like about the film is that frazzled focus. So when this film is centred on a small businessman taking on a huge, immoral titan of death, I was engaged. It did intrigue me. I was interested in this story. David versus Goliath. We all love the underdog. Yet when the film took the attention away from this and focused on the racial undertones and deep-rooted classism that was undoubtedly prevalent in 90s America, I found the film suffered as a result. Now, like you said, don't get me wrong. These subplots and subtexts are crucial topics that should be explored in cinema. Of course they should. But this was a true story that deserved the full attention of the filmmaking process. I felt like the inclusion of hidden motives and secret prejudices may have been crowbarred in to suit a wider narrative. I mean, when at the end of this film, there was a lengthy disclaimer about certain characters and events being changed for entertainment purposes. Plus, in the film itself, the defendant lawyer actually says this is a case about contracts, not race. When you add all of that up, it just feels like, well, you're trying to crowbar in that popular hot topic of the racial divide in America that still is there today. Mm-hmm. And these are important things to think about. But like you said, there are much better films that focus on this. And if you're going to be speaking about these really hefty societal issues, you either make a whole film about them or you don't try to crowbar it in as an afterthought.
This wasn't the film for it.
Exactly that. And it feels this wasn't the film to do it. This film was about two white men fighting over...
contract.
Fighting over a contract about how much money they can gain from the dead.
Mm.
Like, I mean, again, when a huge paragraph comes... And this paragraph comes like 2 minutes into the credits. So it's not straight away. It's only because I was sitting there writing some notes at the end of the film that I saw this. It's like it's its dirty little secret. It gives enough time and then it gives you a huge paragraph to say, like, this is a dramatisation. Like, these are based on real events, but a lot of sort of creative license has been added. When you see that and when it looks like it's been hidden, it's like, well, how much of this have you forced?
It should be at the start.
Exactly. It's like, and so now what am I led to believe? Is this the race stuff about the huge titan funeral home conglomerate death cab thing? It was they exploiting black people who are from poorer communities or not? Did you add that in to try and make it more relevant for today and today's issues that are still there? Are you trying to make this a bigger thing? Are you trying to make this film a platform so you get more eyes on it? Because if this is a true story, tell the fucking true story.
100.
So
does your reflection look better in a broken mirror or a complete mirror?
I mean, both are rough, I've got to be honest with you.
Well, in my mind, a complete mirror is much better because it's singular.
Well, you're getting the fuller picture, aren't you?
A broken mirror, you're all discombobulated.
Exactly.
You look at it. When you're trying to crowbar in the issue of race in a film that's centered on two white men who are both rich in their own rights.
White wealthy men.
It's too discombobulated. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest issues I had with this film was a contract needs two signatures. The company that Tommy Lee Jones wanted to buy him out so he could get a bit of money, they didn't fucking sign.
And sorry, that's a red flag.
He's a moany little bitch.
Go get it.
And he should know his fucking place.
Go get it.
Don't throw your toys out the pram and go hunting down a big company because they said verbally to you, yeah, okay, we could get a deal or get the contract sent over. Why'd you send contracts over to get them signed? If they didn't sign it, you've got no argument, Tommy Lee Jones. Sit the fuck down.
Sit down.
It's true.
But I've just made up a scenario in my head. Mm. So indulge me. Imagine we get big, this podcast skyrockets. Producers want a bit of our cake.
Yeah, $100 a year.
Yeah, huge money like that. Big bucks. And they're like, we really love what you guys are doing. We love it. We want to produce your podcast. We want you to appear on our podcast platform exclusively. We're going to pay for advertisements. We're going to pay you a salary. Excellent. Like, we love you guys. Do it. Sign here, please. You sign it. I don't sign it. A couple of weeks down the line, we meet up with them and they go, yeah, we've had a think about it. We're just taking Harry. I kick off. I go, oh, no, it's both of us. Yeah, but you didn't sign the contract. That is my fault. I didn't sign the contract presented to me, so I can't then have the arse.
Well, yours works. Well, yours is a little different from the film because the film is that Tommy Lee Jones is the eager party wanting to sign because he wants to be bought out so he has some money to play with. The fact that the people he wants them to sign and they're holding off signing. I'm not saying he's wrong on the speculation that potentially they're going to drain him of all his money, but he could have found other buyers.
But it's the fact that it takes two to tango. If for a deal to be made, you both would have had to sign that dotted line.
Do you know what? When someone
fucking sign
if
it.
They don't sign, you retract the contract and you go looking for another investor or buyer.
Yeah, be like, I'm going home now. Oh, I see you haven't signed this contract, this legally binding contract. That means we have both got a deal. You haven't signed it. I'm not leaving until you sign. Well, I'm not signing it. Well, I'm not leaving without the contract.
Do you know what that is? Do you know what he was seeing? That little Zero fighter over the Pacific Ocean, and he's still in that plane. And instead of a gun, he used a pen to take down a corporation because he's a little sore loser bitch.
Okay. Got any more dislikes for me?
Yeah, as courtroom dramas goes, this is bottom. This is big bottom of the list.
Wow.
Watch JFK, watch Philadelphia, watch Cousin Vinny.
Twelve Angry Men.
Twelve Angry Men, Jesus.
Runaway Jury.
There's too many. This was messy. Convenient and loose. The focus was lost. It's not about, it didn't focus on the contract at once. It was all pandering to a majority black jury he was in the KKK. Yeah, but this guy fought for his country. Yeah, but this guy's making black people pay more for burials and pay more for, it was just like, what a circus.
Yeah.
What a circus.
Yeah.
It wasn't enjoyable in one little bit.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
I didn't enjoy it at all, mate.
Oh, I mean, don't hold back.
No.
I didn't think it was great, but I wouldn't say it was awful. I've seen a lot worse.
How many times did you watch it?
Twice.
Fuck. Oh, that's actually giving me heartburn.
I'm going to be honest, though. The second time was a fucking struggle. I must have paused it 28 times to see how much time I had left, because it was. I only watched it a couple of days before, so I watched the two viewings quite close together and it was a fucking slog.
A Time to Kill.
Great film.
Ah, that's courtroom drama.
Yeah.
Matt McConn, Samuel.
Yeah.
Jesus. It's just, that's what I mean. This film is 25, 30 years late, worse, and doesn't have the effect that older films did for courtroom dramas or the struggle of slavery and you know, the whole racial issue in the US.
In a film that focuses on guilt and innocence, I would say I'm guilty of being a bit too lenient with this film. I think I'm being a little more polite, a little more friendly to its cause.
Why's your whole physical being changed?
Because I was quite proud of the analogy of saying that I'm guilty on a court-based film. I thought it's quite clever of myself. So
for people that can't see Adam at the moment, he was a gorilla for about 50 minutes and now he's gone all snake-like.
Well, I'm regal in my revelation.
You've become some feline thing.
Yeah, but I think that there is an element for me, like, I just lap up anything in a courtroom. I'm a simple boy in that sense. Like, if a film's in a courtroom, I love the drama. I love the two lawyers fighting it. And I can't disagree with you and say this is below below par when it comes to these sort of films. But because it was set in a courtroom, because there was all the legal mumbo jumbo, because it was two lawyers trying to battle each other, I like the dance, I guess. I do. And yeah, I know it's not great. I don't think I disliked it as much as you disliked it. But I've got a couple more dislikes. Are you still going strong with some?
You go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things I didn't like is the slow start. I don't know about you, but I feel it took too long to actually get into the courtroom. I was itching to see battle commence in a wrestling ring called Justice. No. Problem is, it took the best part of an hour to get there. Now, I felt the exposition was too long. And, you know, of course, I understand it was necessary to tell the story. I personally would have liked it to have gone to court sooner. I also thought the decision to leave the courtroom later on in the film to take a look into Willie's personal life was a misstep. It is a courtroom drama. Keep it in court.
Well, you're right, because exposition when it comes to something like murder or rape, something horrific, it matters. The exposition matters. In an exposition where some whitey didn't sign a signature on a contract and it goes on for an hour, it's like, this ain't good enough.
Nah.
I mean the calls.
Yeah, yeah.
So this Jerry O'Keefe, is it Jerry O'Keefe?
Yes.
The real guy we're basing this on, the guy who shot down 7 fighter pilots, should write that part of his life more interesting. But like, I'm like, dude, I don't care. I don't care that some rich millionaire company didn't give you millions towards your millions.
I
don't give a fuck.
I grow weary at the plight of the privilege. The worries of the wealthy. I grow wary of such. Damn your eyes, sir. I just felt like it. I have to admit, I'm a sucker for a courtroom drama. I can't hit that point hard enough. No, because I also want to tell you that I do agree. You know?
Okay.
It wasn't
I'll
great.
Accept that if you can tell me a courtroom drama that's worse than this that you've seen.
Well, that
don't worry about gaps. We can get that out.
That I'm going to struggle with because I can't think of one. Hmm. Because this one's so fresh in thy mind. So okay. I can't remember specifically.
Yes.
But that's probably speaks volumes, yes. Going to be honest.
Exactly, because I couldn't. I sat there. And after I sat there, I kept sitting there.
I kept sitting. Shit.
Couldn't stop sitting. And I refused to stand up until I could find a courtroom drama that was worse than this. And I couldn't fucking do it.
So you haven't stood up for days?
No. And the Pistorius real case video, that was wicked. I got hard watching that one. That was amazing.
Okay.
OJ one, brilliant. Real life ones are better than this.
This was a real life one, but...
No, this is a dramatised.
Heavily dramatised.
There ain't a film on the Pistorius one. Yeah. If there is, I'll buy that. But I don't know, nothing's worse than this film in terms of a courtroom.
Think of this film as you're making yourself a squash drink. And the squash in the glass...
What, pumpkin juice?
The squash in the glass is...
Mm-hmm.
Non-factual.
Okay.
So really,
wait.
No, I've ballsed it up. Down, the analogy. Wait. I've ballsed it up.
The squash in the glass is non. Wait.
Right. So if this was a good film, there should be a little bit of squash, but it wasn't so good. So there was too much squash. I bollocksed it up. The analogy didn't work. But that's where I was going.
It's weird as well because I don't usually hear people say squash. I'm thinking of pumpkins and marrows now. And all
do you call what do you call it then? Like Ribenas and juice? Robinsons.
Juice.
Okay.
Concentrated juice.
Well, I think it speaks volumes about the film if we're debating the term for squash or juice. I think that tells you everything you need to hear.
Yes.
I've got one more dislike, and I've said it before and I will say it again. Time is a cunt.
Oh.
Tommy Lee Jones is an absolute legend of an actor. I've loved him in pretty much everything I've seen him in. But this is the first time I've seen him in something and I've seen an elderly man looking back at me.
He looked like a tray of batter.
Very unwell batter. It breaks my heart to see him so withered and he lacked that usual Tommy Lee Jones spark. And that made me really sad, man. He's sort of someone that oozes charisma. There's that sparkle in his eyes. And I know he's an older gentleman. And I know, like I say, time is a cunt. I can't stress it enough. The older I get, the more I realise this. But seeing him... so withered and he just looked like he was struggling. And I don't think it was a result of him trying to act like that. I think he's an old man that was really struggling to act. And that did upset me.
Yeah, I felt he looked tired, but I don't know if that's his character.
I feel I didn't see that sparkle in his eyes. I was looking for that sparkle and I couldn't find it.
Do you know, last time I saw that sparkle was in Lincoln, and he was in that, and that was partly basically a courtroom drama when they're trying to vote in the Emancipation Proclamation, to abolish slavery, and he's the big forerunner in that fight. And that, he was great in that. That's probably one of his last great roles.
Solid sparkles in those eyes in that one.
Big old sparkles.
On a side note, did you clock the size of his earlobes?
I didn't.
I could swing on those dogs.
Really?
I know when, as we age, I know our ears and our nose get bigger.
As we age, I'm getting slower.
The earlobes, you could swing on them. And it all made me sad.
Is that because his skull is receding and the ears are growing? Like, you know when they say, when they find a buried body, they say, oh, the nails keep growing. They don't. It's because the fingers recede.
Oh.
The nails don't keep growing. The fingers recede.
Get shrinky fingers when dead.
Shrinky fingers when dead.
That's sad. We edit that out. I forgot where we were editing that out.
I like it.
I got some questions.
Ugh.
What movie star would you want to defend you in court?
Ryan Gosling.
Because he's your go-to default boy.
He's charismatic. His eyes are close together, which means he can read real well.
Yeah. Fact.
And I want him to get that girl. And I'll be that girl.
It's another classic, I want to end up in Gosling's arms.
No, it's because he never gets the love he deserves.
You'd give him that love.
I adore that man.
My answer would be Daniel Day-Lewis. Purely because he makes everyone believe him. So you want that in your corner. If you want an actor lawyer getting people convinced.
Wait. Is it Daniel Day-Lewis defending you in American court of law or a British court of law?
Don't matter, he can do it wherever he wants.
It does matter.
Timbuktu.
It does matter, because ours has got silly wigs and shit.
I want a wig. I want Daniel Day in a wig.
Oh, I don't think he'd ever do that role.
And I would wear a wig.
He'd have to, if he did do that role, he'd be the greatest lawyer in a courtroom, but outside of court, he's a voyeur. He's wanking and looking in holes and stuff. Real dodgy dude.
That's niche.
He'd have to have two parts to his character if he's a lawyer. If he's just a stone-cold, awesome lawyer, and that's it, he would never take that role.
It's not a role, it's a job. He'd be what actor would be your legitimate lawyer.
I thought you meant in a film.
No, real life.
In real life?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to change my answer now. Then I need a really, really smart person. This to Ryan Gosling. He's a really smart actor.
Daniel Day.
Yeah, but he replicates intelligence. I don't know if he is intelligent.
But isn't that all you need to make people believe you?
I'm not saying he walks backwards around Ireland all the time.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll stick with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when me and you go to court, I've got Daniel Day in my corner. Mm-hmm. You've got the goz in your corner.
Oh, the goz.
Let's make him dance.
It's a Manchester word for flobbing.
Yeah, it is.
Which is a British word for spitting.
What are your top three courtroom dramas?
JFK is so up there. Mm. It's an incredible courtroom drama, purely because of the subject matter, but also because of the way it's delivered. It's just brilliant from start to finish. That whole courtroom drama amazes me. Philadelphia. And then it would be a toss-up between, 12 Angry Men, I don't know if you can call courtroom drama, because they never enter the court. They stay in the deliberation room.
You know what? You are 100% correct. Mm. I have got 12 Angry Men, but you're right. They're only in the jurors' room, aren't they?
Yeah, so...
Oh, so that's made that me... That's fucked me up.
Philadelphia and JFK for sure.
Yeah.
Then maybe, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen A Time to Kill.
Okay. I saw A Time to Kill recently. Solid.
Solid, yeah.
Solid, yeah.
Might be something like that then. Yeah. I enjoy a good courtroom. What is it?
I think you're thinking of the one that I have in my
favourites. Spotlight never goes to court. What was it? Tell me.
A Few Good Men.
Yes, A Few Good Men.
Yeah, yeah. I've got A Few Good Men, 12 Angry Men, which is now redundant. And I've got a soft spot for Runaway Jury, man. Gene Hackers.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Cousin Vinny, I remember enjoying it. I don't know if it's any good anymore.
But I don't know if I've mentioned it in this podcast yet. I really like courtroom drama films.
Rob Reiner did Few Good Men, didn't he? Yeah, it was Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
I love that man.
What would you rate The Burial out of 10?
3.
Mate.
Man, I can't lie, man. I hated the film. I didn't... The calls was crap. The characters were unlikable. What else do you want from me? It was unrealistic, and they deviated way too far from the true story, or they overhyped that whole creative license thing. This is an excellent case for where it ruins a film.
I think we have been very diplomatic in our views of maybe there being a forced narrative crowbarred in there. I think we are looking at this film objectively as it trying to tell a contract conflict story, which is what the story at its fundamental level is.
No,
and it doesn't do
that. It's about money.
It doesn't do that. And I think three's a little harsh, but
no.
I'm not going to bash you around the head if you're going to give it a three, because it's your disco, man. You dance how you want to.
Well, you're invested in the story.
No, I'm saying I wouldn't have gone as harsh as three.
But you have to be invested in the cause, the story. Otherwise, what's the point? You don't watch Interstellar because you want him to fail, do you? You watch it because you want the cause to be just. It's not just. This is about people making money. And that's all it's about.
That, listen,
and that's nauseating for me. I don't enjoy it.
That's your prerogative. You've given it a free. I respect your decision. It's not like I'm sitting here going, mate, you are talking out of your anus. I've given it a stone cold 10.
You gave it a 6, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I would have gone a 5, because for me it was just that. It was bang average. I've probably said it 17 times now. I like being in a courtroom setting. I really do. So for that reason, that's what gives it a bang average rating. I didn't think it was shit. I didn't think it was anything other than average. So that's why I've gone straight down the middle with a 5. That gives The Burial a total score of 8 out of 20. If you like your courtroom dramas to be compelling, charismatic and clearly corrupt, or if you've ever wanted to see a tag team of talent take on big wig dev pigs, then The Burial could be a film for you. The Burial is available to stream on Amazon Prime now. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed A Few Good Men, The Trial of the Chicago 7, and To Kill a Mockingbird. Should we play a game?
Give it a name, give it a name, give it a name now. We birth a plot and then make a trailer. What the plot?
Action! So you've got to be a bit kind to me. Like, I'm new to this. I'm not as experienced as you in the what the plot game.
I know.
So, and this is a little bit of a lengthy one, so bear with thee.
You're a good writer, Lisa, I trust.
Oh, I'm going to cuddle you once this is finished.
Oh, Dad.
In the not-too-distant future, a piece of tech is created where you can record your dreams. This is a simple bit of kit that you would wear to bed like a blindfold. It's non-intrusive, comfortable to wear, and most importantly, not too expensive. In a short period of time, this device skyrockets in popularity and quickly becomes as common as the mobile phone. Relatively soon after its release, most people either have one or have access to one. This device appeals to the masses because it can help them remember loved ones that are no longer with them, as well as being used as a resource of entertainment where users can play their uniquely mad dreams to one another. Suddenly, millions of people around the globe start having the exact same dream. They foresee a deadly virus that is spread through the common household pet. This strain of illness comes from the booster shots given to cats, dogs, etc., and has somehow evolved into something deadly that can be transferred to humans. We see this story from three perspectives. One is from the tech creator, who claims that if their system is causing the exact same dream, the authorities need to treat it as a genuine premonition. Another is from an animal activist who offers beloved pets a refuge by hiding them from the angry mob looking to wipe out the pets. The third and final perspective is from the view of either a president or prime minister who has to make the decision to listen to the dream that is shared by so many. The story centres on society deciding whether to wipe out our beloved pets for something that may or may not happen.
Can you do it again?
Absolutely not.
Can you give it to me in a summary?
There's a device.
Yeah.
That records your dreams.
Okay.
Suddenly, this device that's hugely popular around the world,
mm-hmm.
people start having exactly the same dream. So this device that records dreams, people are having exactly the same dream across the world.
So you can wake up and yeah. you can watch your dreams.
You put it like a US, you plug it into something and you could watch your dreams. If you wake up in the morning and go, what was that mad dream I had? You could watch it back. Now, this story focuses on the fact that this bit of kit, suddenly people are waking up and they're going, I had a mad dream that pets were carrying like an illness and it was wiping out humans. And then people are like, I had the same dream. Then they watch the same thing and on the same screen, it is exactly the same story from their perspectives.
Okay.
So then the film centers on three. So basically you're casting three people. You're casting the tech creator who's like, if my piece of equipment tech is done this, you need to take notice because it's not programmed to make people's dreams the same. It just records whatever you're seeing in your subconscious. You've got an animal activist going, fucking ignore that. You're going to wipe out animals for something that may or may not happen. You're talking bollocks. And then you've got someone who's in authority deciding whether or not they need to slaughter all the animals to save humanity.
This is madder than anything I've ever put forward.
Yes, yeah.
Madder than anything.
Yeah.
Like, why does it cross over?
Let me cook.
I know, that's cool, I know. But why does it cross over from something that records your dreams to cats dying?
Well, because if it was just a shared dream of, like, everyone had the shared dream that they were shagging Boris Johnson, it would just be like, oh, that's weird. But the fact that everyone's having exactly the same dream, it's like, it's noticeable that it's set in the future. And then it becomes like, is this a premonition? Like, are we having this dream as like a warning? And because of the fear of COVID and the whole world globally not wanting to go through a clusterfuck like that, if so many millions of people are having exactly the same dream where humanity is at risk, would they step up or would they be like, this is a bit of equipment that's recording a dream. It's pure coincidence.
And explain the dream to me. What is the dream? Do you know the dream?
Well, the dream is just suddenly that it'll be their personal experience. So their loved one will be got really sick and they learn it's from because of their dog. Or they'd learn that their auntie died because of it. And this story's going worldwide. Imagine the social media uproar, the news outlets, like everyone would be talking about it. It'd just be mad chaos.
Okay. The tech guy.
Yeah.
I see an odd looking person. Okay. I see someone who has strange ideas, but also looks a little crazy. And I'm going to go with Steve Buscemi.
Solid.
I feel like he could definitely be the tech guy.
I see that.
The animal activist, although as much as I'm really struggling to understand the film, I kind of like that aspect of it. But the animal activist, I would have Judy Greer. I find she can play the mad little roles. She's always played really quirky characters, like she did in the Descendants and Arrested Development, as the she's the receptionist, isn't she? I think she would play a great animal activist.
I could see that, like, she's got the best intentions, but I could see her being quite detestable because people are going to be literally going, if these animals don't fucking die, humanity's going to be fucked.
I can see her definitely being like a member of PETA.
Yes.
100%.
All day long. Yeah, leading the charge for the animals. I like that. That's solid casting.
I mean, what struck me about your summary and your plot was how it reeks of satire for me.
Totally. Yeah.
It reeks of satire. Now, I'm always going to use directors that I just think are perfect for it, whether they're dead or alive. I know that might upset you, but and just saying, I don't know the people are dead or alive.
Okay.
Just in case, because I know you tend to use a lot of modern directors.
Okay.
I might use older directors, but the king of satire for me will always be Paul Verhoeven. Total Recall, RoboCop, Starship Troopers. He takes the piss in his films. They're all satires. They're all a Mickey take out of media, out of how we what were things we prize in life. I can imagine him doing this film.
Yeah, because there's certainly satire there. It's certainly look at how people would respond if they thought a pandemic was happening again. You saw this country lose their fucking head over toilet paper at the thought that we were all getting locked down and buying fucking pasta and sauce when it didn't have to happen. So imagine millions of us are seeing in a dream that we're all going to get, there's a pandemic coming. It's coming. It's like a forecasted pandemic. And about something we all love. We all love our animals. So I think Paul Verhoeven steering this ship would be great. Have you got someone in mind for the sort of prime minister or president that's got to make the decision of whether we're basically slaughtering our pets?
I'm going to go on this based on his voice. I find his voice exceptional, and that's Colman Domingo. He's not done loads. He was in Lincoln, Selma, Euphoria, Fear the Walking Dead, If Bill Street Could Talk. I think Colman Domingo, he's got an excellent, deep, rich, whiskey smoke voice.
Oh, I like that. I can't recall the name. I'm sure I would recognise the face.
It's in Fear the Walking Dead, but
show me after.
I'll show you after, but
and,
yeah.
And he's what, president of the USA?
He's
maybe?
The president. Okay. He's got the voice, and you'll see what I mean when I show you. So Colman Domingo is the president. The crazy tech dream dude would be Buscemi. I can see him being that. And definitely Judy Greer for the animal activist.
Yeah. And directed by Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah, because of the satire aspect.
I'm liking this.
Name I'm struggling with, only because I see more than one film in this.
Yes, I see it when I came up with the idea. It's kind of like From Dusk Till Dawn. You start thinking it's like a Black Mirror-esque, like...
That's it.
Oh, it's the tech, it's what the AI, it's what intelligent tech's going to potentially do. And then it takes a turn and it's like, it's pandemic coming and your pets are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I was going to go with Dream the Sheep Away or Technip, as in catnip, but with tech. I mean, you couldn't have hit me with a more difficult plot to find a name because it crosses more than one genre and boundary.
Hey, you sometimes have to be thrown in the deep end to swim. And I believe that. Which one are we?
Well, sheep aren't pets, so I can't really use sheep. Animalia Recall.
Yeah.
Animalia Recall.
Animalia Recall.
Animalia Recall, because that means humans and pets, and it's all encompassing to mammals, etc. So Animalia Recall, because they're going backwards. Yeah. Animalia Recall, directed by Paul Verhoeven, Judy Greer, Coleman Domingo, and Steve Buscemi. Dude, that was dirt.
With Napflix, you can remember the good times and push past the bad with a device that records your subconscious.
Hi, I'm Dr. John Napples. With my groundbreaking Napflix device, you can record and share your deepest desires and darkest dreams with your loved ones. See those who are no longer with us and live out your wildest fantasies.
Napflix, the sleep streaming device that dares you to dream.
If he is alive... The new film from Paul Verhoeven, Animalia Recall, coming soon.